I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The mayor has expressed a desire to share a larger portion in the hotel-motel tax revenue that's derived by the taxes that were placed in the city of New Orleans many, many, many years ago. And in fact, the city gave up part of it in looking forward, trying to make sure that the dome and other expenditures that were there were going to be able to be successful. And the mayor believes at this point in time, it's a time to reconsider any number of things. BGR has done an analysis of the Orleans Parish Hotel tax structure, and they join us in the studio, Amy Glavinsky, who is the president and CEO of BGR, and Paul Rue, who is the research analyst. I said that right, right?
You got it.
Paul Rue, who is the research analyst for BGR. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So when we look historically as to this tax, why don't you give our listening audience a little bit of the background of that?
Sure. Well, the report that you're referencing is entitled The Lost Penny. And that's because in 1966, in conjunction with the building of the Superdome, the city agreed to suspend its then 1% sales tax as it applied to hotels, really sort of to facilitate the expansion and growth of the Superdome. We came across that fact in conjunction with a report that we did in 2015 that comprehensively looked at all locally generated revenues. And it really stayed with us because we believed it wasn't so apparent anymore, and circumstances had changed since then, so it seemed to be an anomaly. Fast forward to this report, and what we did is
You said it seemed to be an anomaly, meaning what?
The suspended sales tax as it applied to hotels.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So when we prepared to do this report, we started with that fact pattern as sort of historical context, and then we realized that to understand where we should be today relative to where we were in 1966, we really needed a comprehensive analysis of the local hotel tax structure.
And so in looking at this, what did your study reveal?
In short, it revealed that from the perspective of best practices as well as comparisons of the six largest parishes in Louisiana and then nationally peer cities, that there exists a finding that the hotel tax available for general purposes should be increased by at least 1%.
So that the original amount of money that the city gave up, that there should be consideration that we think about bringing that back on, and I guess that would raise us to just north of 17% hotel-motel tax in total, correct?
Yes, if you were to restore the entire 1% as a new tax, although our finding is a little bit more nuanced than that.
Right.
We suggest restore 0.55% and bring us to the more recent high of 16.9. And then before you exceed that, you should proceed with caution so as to not reach a hotel tax rate that could depress tourism. And instead look at existing hotel tax recipients to determine whether there are opportunities for rededications.
Yeah. There is evidence around, and I think in Nashville they have one of the highest tax rates in the country, and they've had increasing numbers, have they not, in booking hotel room bookings. I know they, in 2016, 2017, they saw significant increases, and I think it's carried forward into 2018. And I think you guys pointed out that even when there was a blip up a couple of years back, that it really didn't seem to impair hotel room bookings in the city, right?
That's right. There were indicators that the tourism economy continued to grow, notwithstanding that increase.
So I know one of the things that the mayor was talking about is that there are fund balances of some of the recipient agencies of the hotel-motel tax that she's kind of honed in on as being a possibility of getting some monies to help in the sewage and water board crisis that they're facing from a budgetary standpoint, and obviously some of the other city services. And when we were talking off air, I was kind of curious as to whether or not we actually looked at these agencies and how their approach is and fully funding depreciation and making sure that the CapEx dollars were there to keep the facilities up and running and as current as can possibly be, and to always change the look. I noticed the convention center's put in a new entry. They're now doing a pedestrian walkway out front. They're trying to keep the facilities as current as possible moving forward because they're in a competition business. The same would hold true for the Dome. There's always been a talk about a new stadium. There's a new arena, obviously. Did y'all evaluate it from that point, making sure that depreciation was fully funded?
So sort of a two-part answer to your question. Right. The focus of this report is not how our convention centers and sports facilities financed elsewhere and how do we compare on that front. It's different. It's when you look at the hotel tax structure and other jurisdictions, what percentage goes toward general municipal purposes, what percentage goes to the city in recognition that tourists and visitors use city assets and city services. So that's a different analysis than looking at how the facilities are financed and what best practices on that front suggest.
Why wouldn't we look at it of what the best practice is overall as opposed to just one silo of how the money is ultimately divvied up? I mean, those are policy decisions that are made by the political leadership in those cities. And it's a little bit different here because these are state-owned assets as opposed to city-owned assets. And obviously, I get what the accounting rub is going to be. As to these boards that sit there as a fiduciary, and their primary obligation is to make sure they have a current facility that's properly maintained that meets the challenges of the future. We know that the city suffers in fully funding depreciation and CapEx and making sure that their assets are maintained. We read about it in the paper every day. We don't read about in the paper every day about maintenance challenges at the convention center or other facilities.
Yeah, I would just add that we agree with you that the convention center should have adequate capital funding going forward, and that should be part of any analysis of the size of its reserves. And so we drew no conclusions about that, but what we did is we pointed out, as you know, the convention center is embarking on $500 million capital improvement plan to really fully renovate the convention center, keep it competitive with all the others across the country. And so one of their scenarios for financing that shows that, once they've had some one-time expenditures for that, after 5 years, that their reserves could then resume growing at about $25 million a year. And so all we're doing is sort of flagging that, let's take a look at that. How much do they need going forward to make sure they keep this facility well-maintained, competitive going forward?
I guess, when you talk about being the fiscal steward and you're looking at what your policy concerns are about a big building, I mean, what is it, 1 million square feet and could potentially be more, obviously has led to the rejuvenation of the lower warehouse district. There's even going to be more improvements. It seems to me that we're taking a little bit of a short-sighted approach because we're not thinking about all of the increase in sales tax and property tax and everything that happened as a result of these assets being properly maintained. I mean, when you look at the Poydras Corridor, for example, and I mean, the prime example is Plaza Tower. Everyone thought that Howard Avenue was going to be the epicenter of the city. And then comes the Dome, and then comes the Poydras Corridor, where they widened Poydras Street. It used to be an old rail yard, and it turned out to be something entirely different. And just 2.5 blocks away, you have a landmark high-rise that is completely empty and dilapidated. So when you look at the anchor feature of these facilities, whether it be the convention center and or the arena and the Superdome, I think sometimes we sell that short. I mean, as to what that actually meant to the city. Actually, the wisest thing they might have ever done was give up the penny. Because in giving up that penny in order to secure what was happening, they really made an investment in their future, and their return on their investment, I think, has been huge. So the point that I'm trying to make is that would that not be an appropriate calculation to look at?
Well, definitely. At the time, I mean, I don't think we're certainly not making an argument that that was not a wise investment, a wise decision. It's just here we are a half century later. Let's take another look at it and see if it's going forward still the smart thing to do.
So you're not discounting any of that?
No. I think you mentioned the idea, of course, tourism and visitors, they spend when they're here, not just on their hotel rooms, and we do derive other fiscal benefits from them coming, restaurants, shopping, all of that. But a point we made in our report is the peer cities receive those same types of indirect benefits from tourist spending, and yet on balance, most of them do allocate a greater portion of hotel tax revenue to the municipal services and infrastructure, which also benefits tourists
point,
and makes
it gets back to the point. They control those assets. They own the stadium. They own the convention center, or it's a subset of the city. In this case, it's not. It's a subset of the state. So the policy friction and rub in the financing of fully funding depreciation and CapEx is entirely different. I mean, the mindset, they're never going to align, because that was the whole purpose behind the tax in the first place, was doing a legitimate fiscal study of what it was going to require in order to keep these assets current and everything else. And here we are now saying, oh, we've reaped all the benefits all of these years, but we really want to reconsider this at this point in time because of what? But, I mean, when we compare to the other peer cities, they make the policy decision of whether or not they want to do that because they control it all, and that's not the case here. And in your charts, in San Francisco is a classic example because they control all of those assets. Mm-hmm. They decide, do I want to reinvest in that asset? Or do I not want to reinvest in that asset? Classic example is they end up losing a stadium to a whole different county. Candlestick is shut down. They never really did reinvest in Candlestick. And they ultimately lost that stadium to a neighboring county down there that was willing to make the investment and put together a package with that owner at that point in time. At the same time, they build San Francisco Giants Stadium. And in many of these cities as well that are used in the peer group, these stadiums are privately owned. And, you know, so it kind of makes it a little bit of a different thing. So when you think about in the city, and this is just, what I was getting to, is that City Park is a state-owned facility. I think Audubon is as well. You have Convention Center, Arena, the baseball park out in Jefferson Parish, another baseball park on the West Bank in Jefferson Parish, another facility out there that all comes, these are all state-owned facilities, then they're all financed and depreciation is dealt with through this tax. I think we might be needing to drill down to a much lower level in making these comparisons, as just globally a mayor decides she doesn't want to renovate the stadium. She doesn't want a new entrance to the convention center. She may not want that. She may want more money spent on sewage and water board. And if she controlled all of those, I couldn't argue with her, because the fact that we have boil water advisories and we can't drain water is a huge problem. But we can't rewrite history. Your thoughts?
You raise interesting points, and the first thing I'll say is this is a great discussion that we're having. What we haven't touched on is sort of the local taxing capacity issue and the fact that the hotel tax.
We got to take a break and we'll come right back to your point of the local taxing, because I think that is a great issue to segue into at this point in time. We'll be right back with Amy Glavinsky, President and CEO of BGR, and Paul Rue, Research Analyst for BGR. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. All right, we're back, and I promise I won't interrupt as quick this time, but we had to catch up. Amy Glavinsky, President and CEO of BGR, as well as Paul Rue, Research Analyst for BGR. We were talking about taxing capacity, that you do reach a point where there's a point of diminishing return.
That's right. There's a point of diminishing return. There's a point at which you exceed the taxpayer's tolerance. And the reason this conversation is so important is that in 2013, there was a 1.75% assessment that the Convention and Visitors Bureau, then Convention and Visitors Bureau, I think sponsored in the legislature to raise more revenue. We, BGR, opposed it at that point in time because we said, wait a minute, let's just assess competing needs. Let's make sure this is a deliberate imposition of this effective tax on the tax base before you proceed. That passed, and the next year the city came and said, okay, we, the city of New Orleans, would like a 1.75% hotel tax to, you know, facilitate our general fund. And that was defeated because local taxing capacity had reached the ceiling and there was no more there was no more tolerance for it in the city's favor. So the point is, hotel taxes have to be considered holistically, comprehensively, within the context of competing local needs. I understand what you're saying about different ownership
facilities. I agree with you there. I think that's one of those conversations that needs to be had, because there is a capacity, and as you said, there is not only a legal ceiling that's in place, but there's really a market ceiling that's in place as well, right?
Right.
You know, and I get that you can't have one entity go and consume it all to the detriment of others.
That's right. And so, you know, a big portion of our report that I want to make sure isn't lost in this discussion is that we looked at best practices for a hotel tax structure, and we pointed out things like planning and prioritization is important, transparency is important, accountability is important, and really, in most instances, just calling for a community-wide understanding and informed dialogue about this issue so that as decisions are being made relative to hotel taxes, they are deliberate and in the context of a plan that makes sense.
But historically, I guess part of the rub has been is that the city has not been able to live up to its obligations. And, you know, promises made are promises broken. And, you know, so from their perspective, I kind of get what they're saying is that, you know, we want to be able to control our future as much as possible. That doesn't make it right in the long term, and it doesn't mean that's the right equation. I'm with you on that in the long term, but that's kind of the historical sense of what it is. And one of the notions that I thought about and we talked about briefly off air is that why not have a collaborative effort in giving the convention center more responsibility for an area around the convention center, so it's more like they're investing in themselves and the improvements of sidewalks, surface streets, things of that nature, that they take that on and eliminate that obligation to the city, because then they know that investment in themselves will ultimately be made and not have to compete with the priorities of all of the other things. And in Jefferson Parish, that's kind of how it worked with the sheriff's office, is they took law enforcement out of competing with the recreation department or the drainage department or the streets department, and they had their own funding source that was created so they wouldn't compete, because they know that in every poll that's ever done, it's crime is either the one or two issue. Second would be drainage, depending on the last rainstorm. And it's no different in the city of New Orleans.
It's a creative idea that you propose, one that we haven't considered. But I want to point out to you that in our report, we specifically say that if policymakers implement our recommendation, the dollars that result from it, so the new tax revenue to the city, needs to be held in a separate budgetary fund where there's clear accountability for its use, to ensure that it's used for the critical needs that need to be addressed. And I would say that there is ultimately an alignment of interests between tourism and the tourism sector and the city, because as the city goes, so goes tourism. So ultimately, the goal is the same.
There's no doubt. In fact, we have a rough weekend from a crime perspective, and right away, the first thing that we're thinking about is how it's going to impact tourism. We're on the advent of the Mardi Gras season, and all of that, and your entire marketing spend could just go gone, with one event that may be a challenge. Actually, the mayor's going to come on tomorrow, and we're going to talk about that a little bit, because it is a challenge, and as we try to diversify this economy, I think you're correct, and we're talking about capacity, is that it's going to really take more people sitting at the table. And in your report, I agree with some of the summary conclusion, for what it's worth, I think a level of transparency and just more communication as to what the vision is of, let's say, the convention center or the Poydras Corridor and the state assets there, and whether or not the baseball stadium out in Jefferson Parish, what's the future of that facility? We're spending money there. They've already announced that they may be leaving the baseball team out there. Are we a baseball town? I don't know. But these are all things that are consuming that capacity that you talk about.
Right.
All right. Well, appreciate y'all coming in. I think y'all have another appointment to go to. Yes. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be right back after the break. We want to hear from you, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we were talking about an analysis of the Orleans Parish hotel tax structure. And, I will reiterate, there were some findings in here that I do agree with. I think there needs to be a more open and collaborative conversation. I know that many have tried to do so. But now it's been kind of a tug of war and a political tug of war that's been created. But in all fairness to the mayor, I understand her frustration, and she's assumed all of these problems coming in as the newly elected mayor. But when you think about going back over 40 years, and look, folks, all you got to do is go walk into City Hall. I mean, it's rare that you can find a functioning elevator. So when you talk about priorities as to the upkeep of the physical assets of what they own, the real estate, in funding depreciation and making sure that the CapEx spend is there on maintenance and everything else to keep these facilities current and otherwise, they are challenged. And they make policy decisions every day to take and make that spend somewhere other than in those assets. And that's fine. But it can't be that you're asking of these other agencies to do that as well, because they should not. And in fact, I would argue that, when we talk about the tourism industry down at the convention center and what they do, they have had to keep that place as current can be in light of emerging challenges that are different today than they were in the convention business 20 years ago, and they've done a great job of staying current. Now, whether or not that means they build a new hotel at the other end and the vacant property or not, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But what I do know is that we have succeeded in the tourism industry. And it has been an incredible return on the city's investment in giving up that penny. Given enough time, I can promise you I could quantify the number. And, so now it begs of whether there's going to be this recalculation, how this is going to go about, and what is it going to be in the best interest moving forward. But it can't be that we're going to go taking away from the tourism industry, because that's where our real successes have been. And then that's the basis and the foundation of this economy. And while we are having the huge successes that we had in 2016, 17, and 18 in trying to diversify this economy, I don't know that we want to go raiding other funds that help support the tourism industry. We have exhibited success there, and we continue to grow there. We have more hotel rooms now than we've ever had. And their ADR, their average daily rates, have been successful. So as we continue to talk about this, I think we have to keep that historical context in place. And I encourage, and I'm glad that BGR is looking at it. I think they're going to have a series of reports, as indicated by them, on doing this. I do believe that there are some fundamental differences between our hotel-motel tax and some of our peer cities around the country, and why dollars are going here, there, or otherwise, because of who owns the assets. And when you're in control of all of them, you can set the priority for each and every one of them. Let's go to Stephen in New Orleans on line two. What say you, Stephen?
There. Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of questions out there. Where's the extra money for the rent-a-car go? Where's the money go for all this? Of course, you live in Jefferson Parish, but every time I get a utility bill, I get a charge for future hurricanes that's been going on for, 12 years now? And what's going on with that? And what interest rate is that sitting at? I mean, there's a lot of, Jefferson Parish doesn't have that.
No, we do. Actually, I think we do through Entergy, actually.
Where's that money going, and what's it doing?
Well, on
now,
the
that may be
on
another
the,
show.
Well, on the hotel motel tax side, they collect about $200 million, give or take a few dollars. Of that, the LSED, the Louisiana Stadium and Expedition District, gets $60 million. The Convention Center gets $51 million. The tourism industry gets $21 million. The City of New Orleans gets $20 million. The school board gets $18 million. The Tourism Marketing Corporation gets $14 million. It goes on and on. RTA gets $6 million, State of Louisiana $5 million, and then there's a couple of other at $1 million and less. And that's how it's broken out. But it's really to help maintain and fund these incredible assets. When you think about the convention center, that's a million square foot facility. It's not cheap keeping that current. And, that's the only point that I'm making, is that the rub right now, in my view, seems to be whether or not, the maintenance and upkeep of these facilities are a priority. And obviously, to the state, the owner of these facilities, it's a priority. To me, as a taxpaying citizen, I think it should be a priority, because these things are the hallmark and the basis and the foundation of the tourism industry, which is our most viable and reliable industry that we've had for the last 30, 40 years. So,
but how about all these other things, like the utilities and our driver's licenses are more expensive
those are all fees that go to operating those functions. Where all those dollars go, I don't necessarily know, but I'll look into it and report it out. Thanks, Stephen. Appreciate it. Got to get to a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Blue Runner opinion poll: should the city receive more of an estimated $200 million in hotel taxes collected? Yeah, the poll is evenly split, 50-50. Let's go to Bobby in Raceland on line one. What say you, Bobby?
Hey, bud. How you doing today?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Doing fine. Got a question for you, Newell. Yep. Maybe you can give me some info. What is the water cost for residential in New Orleans? What is the average cost?
I don't know the answer to that question.
I heard somebody the other night on TV and watching these people, $300, $450.
Yeah.
But if my water bill goes over $14, and I understand, utilities in New Orleans, they are all old, et cetera. My question is, do you think that Mardi Gras will ever be canceled, or all the festivals in New Orleans and all the people that are coming in and out of the hotel, motels, condominiums, etc., the consumption of water on their side? Do you think
no
at the Hyatt Hotel or Holiday Inn or anybody else? I think if they tax them more, because you and I during the week, and there's not a festival going, we'll pay $100 a night.
Yeah. Well, it's
but when Carnival comes around, it costs you $200, $300 a night.
Absolutely.
Why don't we pass that cost on? I don't think on $100, if a guy's got to pay 4 cents extra, 4% extra on $100. That's, you know, 40 cents.
Well, the hotel motel tax now is almost 17%. It's 16 and some change. You know, so for every dollar
but
you
I got
tax
a
at about
suppose six... we brought it. Suppose we brought it to 20%.
Well, they're saying that would be the highest in the country, and that it may be a point of diminishing return, and it may affect bookings in the city when you raise it to that number. I don't know the answer to the question, Bobby, but you know the thing is that you have an aging infrastructure from the water delivery system, one in which has been neglected for years. And now they're having to try and play catch up, whether it be drainage, whether it be water, whether it be sewage. We just opened the first two water towers in the city of New Orleans. I mean, you could go. I remember hunting in, I think it was Bude, Mississippi, and I'm going down this right away, and I'm in the middle of nowhere, and I'll run into a water tower back in the early 1980s. And I keep thinking of that because this is not like new technology. It's been around forever and a day. But yet we've just got to the point where we've actually had this here. And that's why we have these boil water advisories, is that we can't keep the water system pressurized. And that's why you have the water towers, is to use gravity to help you do that. But anyway, Bob Mitchell sitting in for Scoot this week. Bob, what do we have coming up?
I got a couple of things. Number one, should President Trump respond to the comedy shows like Saturday Night Live? He gets sucked into that all of the
time.
Wait,
what is that about? Everybody makes fun of the president. I mean, you know, whether it's him or any other president, just get over it.
He just can't keep his mouth shut. No, his skin is much, much too thin. We're going to talk about, of course, what happened this past weekend with all the violence. Is it going to change the way you conduct yourself and go to Mardi Gras?
Were you as surprised as I was that, and I didn't realize it, left here Friday and looking at the schedule, already having parades? It's like, oh, my God, Mardi Gras is here. It's happening this weekend.
It slipped up on me. You know, and we were getting on the North Shore. We were going to lunch, and all of a sudden, can't go anywhere because of the
parades. Well, y'all had parades over
there
this
year. Right, we did, yeah.
And then, you know, we got the first weekend coming up, and obviously, and hopefully the weather's going to be good because it's important to our local economy for sure.
And I'm going to be asking people to let me know, where do you watch the parade? Is it going to change anything? Are you going to now say, well, I usually go to Canal Street, I'm going to move over here? It's got to be in back of people's minds.
You know, I had the head of Homeland Security in here the other day, and I have to say I was very impressed by the plan that they have in place. They've thought of a lot of different things. Obviously, they don't control mm-hmm. everything. They don't control everyone's behavior. But it seems as though they have a good plan in place. They were conducting an exercise this past week in preparation for all of that. And we'll have the mayor on tomorrow as well, and we'll talk about some of that as well. Bob, thanks so much. Bob Mitchell is up next, sitting in for Scoot. Stay tuned. He always has an interesting show. We appreciate everyone's participation today, and we'll see you guys again tomorrow. Have a good evening.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.